Well, happy Thursday. Hope you've had a good week, this Memorial Day week that it is. And thank you so much for tuning into Perspectives this morning on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Before we get things kicked off, a reminder, you are always welcome to be a part of the conversation via telephone, email. If you want to tweet, that's fine, too. I don't know if we're up on Tumblr and Instagram yet. I will check with the MIS folks, and we will take care of that right away. 414-1234. Is the local number. If it's long distance from you to us, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. And if you're tweeting, you can do that via at WFSU Perspective. Well, this lady is one of four daughters in a family headed by a real nice couple, Adele and Bob Graham, a nice moderate American folk. She settled into life in Tallahassee after her dad became the state's 38th governor. She attended Leon High, has a bachelor's degree from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, law degree from American University's Washington College of Law, is married to Steve Herm, has three great kids, just a lovely lady, the gal next door for sure, except she got a little bit involved in politics along the way. She worked on her dad's 2004 presidential campaign until he had to drop out for health reasons. Also worked on the Howard Dean and John Kerry campaigns. You've also been a Leon County Schools administrator, and now you happen to be the congressperson from the 2nd District of Florida, and you are Gwen Graham, and thank you for coming on.
Oh, I am so thrilled to be here, Tom. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show. I've been looking forward to it.
You have been one busy lady, but before we get into all the policy niceties and stuff, because let's face it, we are public radio. We have a pretty wonkish audience, and that suits us just fine. Has this turned out the way you thought it would?
It has been even better than I expected. I had no preconceived notions about what being in the House of Representatives would be like, but I approached it, just as I said during my campaign, to build relationships, build friendships, and we have been able to disprove the belief that freshman members of Congress cannot be effective. And I attribute that to my approach, which is looking for good people and being willing to sit down and talk through the issues and find fair outcomes that are compromises that are the right thing to do for North Florida. And I'm honored. I cannot tell you, with possibly the exception of the birth of my three incredibly wonderful children, I am so honored to be in a position to represent North Florida in Congress.
But talk about swimming against the tide. During the last electoral cycle, you were one of only two Democrats to win a U.S. House seat throughout the entire country. And it was only, what, a 2,200-vote margin between you and Mr. Sutherland in that election. And a lot of people did not give you a snowball's chance of getting in there. Was that a surprise? I know you were campaigning like crazy, but still.
You know, I give complete and total credit to the people of Florida's 2nd Congressional District. We campaigned everywhere. And some people questioned what we were doing. And I said, no. I said, I want to let everyone know across this district, the biggest district in Florida, that if you give me the honor of representing you, that I'm going to work so hard and that I'm going to represent you to the best of my ability. And through the connection that I had with folks, I believe that that was the difference in this race. And indeed, some people in Washington consider me a miracle, because it was a year that not many Democrats won. That's an understatement. But I don't even – you know, I don't – to me, it's not about being a Democrat or Republican. To me, it's about being someone that wants to be informed, is informed, and is making difficult decisions based on facts. And there are some tough decisions that I've had to make, and I've had to weigh the pros and the cons of pieces of legislation that's not perfect. But that's my approach, and that's what I committed to doing while I was running. And what's been interesting is there have been some people that have been surprised that I'm doing what I said I would do while I was campaigning. And I understand that, because there is some cynicism that has developed in the political process. But, you know, I'm a person of my word. I'm a person who leads with my heart. Those who have met me, and if I haven't met you yet, I hope I have a chance to, those who are listening today. And the whole reason I got into this race was because I felt that I was ready to serve. And it was driven by my heart and my desire to provide help and representation and service to the people of North Florida, the best place in the world.
Considering the fact that you are a Democrat in a district which, outside of what some folks sort of waggishly refer to as the People's Republic of Leon, which is predominantly Democratic, an awful lot of red areas out there in the hinterlands throughout the sprawling 2nd Congressional District, which is huge, the biggest one in Florida. And you made your pledge during the campaign you would represent their interests as well as the folks in your own party. You have frequently sometimes aggravated some folks who supported you during the campaign, said, well, I expected Gwen to vote, you know, straight Democratic all down the line, but you never said you'd do that.
Right. I mean, during the campaign, I said that I was not going to be a vote for either party, but that I was going to be an informed vote for what I thought was the best and the right decision. Again, recognizing those decisions, you know, you have to weigh the good and the bad, like we all do in life when we're making choices. And the way that I've approached each piece of legislation is to learn as much as I could about the issue and then vote the way that I felt was the best in, again, an imperfect environment.
You had a major announcement just this week. You did a workday following in your dad's footsteps when he was governor of Florida. He did his periodic workdays. You have carried on that tradition. But you were over in Apalachicola and had a major announcement concerning that nearly three-decade-long spat that Florida and Alabama and Georgia have had over that river basin. What was the nature of that announcement?
Well, first, thank you for recognizing my father. I could not be a prouder daughter in terms of the what he represents in terms of public service. And I wake up every day and I recognize that I want to honor what he represents. And the work days, when I started to run, there were two things I was told I could not do. One was I couldn't carry those little notepads. I'm not sure if you know, but Dad
– color-coded,
yes,
yet.
Yes, they're color-coded by season, please. And the other thing that I was told I couldn't do was work days. And I had to respectfully disagree with that because I watched my father become a better public servant, become more empathetic, have a greater understanding of the challenges that people face. So it's not just about the job you do for the day, it's the friendships you build. So a couple days ago, I did a work day on the Apalachicola Bay, working with oyster men and women who are currently reshelling the bay, and did that, started at 6 o'clock in the morning and did that all morning. And then in the afternoon, actually went out and did some tonguing for oysters. And let me just tell you, Tom, it is tough. I'm a person. I watched Shannon Hartsfield, who was providing direction. I watched him do it, and I was like, "Oh, I can do this, no problem." Got out there and was tonguing away, and pulled up my basket, and I had like one very lonely oyster. So of course I kept trying until I was able to get a respectable basket up, but. But then that was followed with a piece of legislation that is so near and dear to my heart and something that I knew was going to be a priority for me if I was given the honor of being elected to Congress. It's called the Apalachicola Bay Restoration Act. And it's really very simple. And what it does is it allows the Corps of Engineers to consider the downstream users of the Apalachicola Bay in the river in terms of sustainment of their ecosystem. When the act was put into place in 1945, that's been the source of much litigation, I don't believe that Congress was even contemplating, you know, what could happen with the development from Atlanta, you know, down to Franklin County. And the Corps of Engineers does not currently have any legal authority to consider the downstream users. So it's very simple, and I can't tell you how proud I am and how much it means to me that 20 other members of the Florida delegation supported me on this bill as lead co-sponsors. And Florida, one of the things I'm committed to doing is bringing back the Florida delegation working together on issues that are important to Florida. And as the third most populous state in the country now, our size provides us a lot of clout. And this is not a Florida versus Georgia versus Alabama. It should not be presented in that way, in my opinion. And it's unfortunately developed in that manner. I know the litigation is currently outstanding. Florida sued Georgia on this issue, and the Supreme Court has turned it over to a special master. The special master has directed the parties, get together and figure this out. I mean, and so I know that there is a desire on the part of the governor of Georgia to figure this out. And it's very expensive. Litigation is so costly. And I'm hoping, as the eternal optimist, I am the glass half full person, as the eternal optimist, that this will be a catalyst to bringing people back together to, in a reasoned manner, work out a fair resolution to this decades plus, 25-year long saga. And I feel very, very optimistic that we'll be able to do that. I've developed close friendships with the Georgia delegation, and we'll be talking with them about why this is a reasonable approach forward that will save everybody the time, energy, and effort of a lawsuit, and will allow us to work together as neighbors.
As we know, most of the folks who benefit from litigation are usually attorneys, and that's okay. Everyone has to make a good living, but it can be a somewhat wasteful and counterproductive way of addressing a lot of these issues.
Exactly. And there is a group, the Apalachicola Chattahoochee Flint River stakeholders, that have been working together very well. And then the lawsuit was pretty much put a stop to their ability to sit down together and try to develop some fair solutions to this problem. And they're getting back together again. And this piece of legislation, and with the strength of the Florida delegation behind it, what it does is it levels the playing field for Florida, and it provides a better opportunity for all of the stakeholders to work together.
U.S. Representative Gwen Graham of Florida's 2nd Congressional District, our guest on Perspectives, 414-1234-800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Now, how many times have you woken up and said, I got to talk to my congressperson? I got a beef. And well, here is your opportunity, because Gwen Graham, the congressperson for Florida's 2nd Congressional District, is our guest on Perspectives the entire hour. 414-1234, the local number, and 800-926-8809 is long distance from UDOS. Or email to perspectives@wfsu.org. Let's not keep Donna hanging on the line any longer than absolutely necessary. Hey, Donna, thanks for calling.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello, Ms. Graham. Honored to speak with you.
Hi, Donna.
And I want to take personal responsibility again for your lack of ability to dance. When I had the chance to teach you as your ballet teacher 100 years ago. But it's an honor to speak with you. And thanks for working on the environment and veterans issues. But I want to talk to you about something I think is a bipartisan issue that affects just everyone in the United States, but particularly Floridians and those in North Florida. And I've been working as a mental health professional, specializing in treating chronic pain patients, and the laws have just swung so far in one direction that 9 out of 10 Floridians now do not have access to pain care, or their pain is undermanaged or not managed at all. And pain patients and their caregivers have been criminalized. And very quietly, even FDLE has taken over the keeping of statistics for suicide. So we're not even getting an accurate count of, especially the older Floridians that are just treating their pain conditions with suicide. And it's very disconcerting. And I heard on this radio station this morning that the doctor and the nurses in South Florida County was arrested for manslaughter for treating pain. And so where will it stop? Are we going to arrest our doctors in hospice for murder and manslaughter? I don't know. It's very concerning. I get a minimum of 10 calls a day begging, where can I find help? Where can I find help? And I tell them, well, it's a political issue. You really need to write, call every elected official you know or move out of the state, because it's unfortunate that we can't keep people working because we can't treat their pain issues. So what do you think?
Well, Donna, first, I will not blame you for my questionable dancing skills. You were an excellent instructor. This is an issue, I understand, you know, prescription drug medication and the regulation of it, is an issue there. I was actually yesterday with the sheriff in Jefferson County, and he was talking about the prescription drugs being one of the challenges that they really face in terms of illegal use of prescription drugs. So, you know, we need to find a balance between, prescribing them and the way that they're intended to be prescribed, and the unfortunate misuse of prescription drugs at times. I would love to have an opportunity to talk with you further about this issue. I don't know if there's – Tom, is it possible for us to get Donna's contact number after the call is ended?
Absolutely,
And thank you for your concern, Donna, and look forward to talking with you more about ways we can be involved in helping you.
Yeah, Donna, you hang on the line. We'll get your contact information and get it to the representative here in just a moment. Thank you very much for your call. My daughter just went through cancer therapy and has run up against the same thing from its well-deserved reputation as Pill Mill Central.
Yes.
Florida has now gone to a very restrictive kind of thing, which,
yes,
again, the balance, the pendulum has
the
to, yeah, has to swing there somewhere.
Yes.
Let's go back to the phones. George awaits. Hi, George. Welcome back to Perspectives.
Good morning, Tom, and good morning, Congresswoman Graham. One of the your dad was one of the great statesmen that we had in this state, not only as a state representative and senator, but as a governor and certainly a United States senator. I wanted to ask you if there is any discussion. Several years ago, there was a piece of legislation that was supported by Alan Boyd when he was our congressman and Representative Ehrlich of Maryland, called the Blind Persons Empowerment Act, which allowed for people that were making less than $30,000 or so to receive Social Security benefits so that they could purchase training aids and other things mm-hmm. that they needed. Of course, I'm going to be retiring in 15 months. And certainly for what I have your dad and a lot of other people who served us well as state workers to thank for that.
Well, George, thank you for bringing this up. I have not been aware of that particular piece of legislation being reintroduced. I would certainly ask my team to take a look at that, and we'll see what we can do. And also, thank you for your kind words about my father. I am certainly a very proud daughter, and as I said earlier during the broadcast, I wake up every day recognizing that the reputation and belief in his type of public service is one that people are yearning to get back to, and I will work very, very hard to honor that type of legacy. So, no, I have not heard of that, George, but we'll certainly look into it. And again, look forward to following up with you.
And George is a fantastic regular advocate for disabled issues here on Perspectives. We appreciate your input all the time, George.
Thank you, George.
Before we get back to the calls, you mentioned your dad's work days and you carrying on that tradition. I know that he, back when I was covering him, and lo, these many years ago, the opposition was always howling about it was a gimmick and it was just a cheap trick and a way to pretend to be a populist. What do you really learn from those things?
You can't even put it into words, really. The opportunity to firsthand understand the whatever job you happen to be doing during the day. One of my work days recently was at West Point Home in Chipley, where they manufacture comforters and towels, pillows, all kinds of things. As a matter of fact, if any of the listeners shop it, and I have not been paid by any of these businesses, but if you happen to shop at Target or Costco or Marshall's or Kohl's, you may purchase a comforter that I put together. And so it was really amazing to see the manufacturing that's going on in Chipley. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was the people that I got to work side by side with that I now have friends for life and a chance to, if we're considering something, a piece of legislation or something that might affect their lives, I can call them up and say, what do you think about this? Do you think this is a good idea? And getting those firsthand opportunities to firsthand understand what we do as legislators and how they could potentially impact people's lives, there's nothing more important than that. And my dad has done 430 work days. I've got a long way to go to get there, but they are very special.
Back to the phones we go. Rachel is awaiting here on Perspectives. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Representative Graham.
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well.
I will luckily get to be working with you in D.C. this summer, and I was wondering, as somebody who has paved quite a way for herself, and for me as a young girl who's graduating from high school this year, what advice can you give to girls my age who are trying to pave the way for themselves for a bright future?
Well, Rachel, you're already well on your way. You are such a spectacular young woman. And Rachel was one of the five young women you need to know that the Tallahassee Democrat recognized. Follow your passion. Follow your passion, whatever that happens to be, and wake up every day. And if you feel that it's not work, that's what you should be doing.
Well, we were talking just a moment, and thank you for your call, Rachel, about the incredible generation of motivated, intelligent, hardworking young folks that we have the opportunity to work with here at the station, that you do in your office, Representative. But there are a lot of kids who need more motivation, who need more support from the community, from, you know, if parents are absent, whatever, to come in and fill those gaps and give them the wherewithal to move forward. As a nation and as a congressperson, what can we do to kind of move that ahead?
Right. Well, first, Tom, if you'd please call me Gwen, I really appreciate it.
Sure.
just this morning, I was meeting with a wonderful, wonderful woman who is in charge of a mentorship program for young women called the DIVA program. And I just got so invested in talking with her because I think we as a community, we need to all come together to support young people and be in a position to be a mentor, be involved in their lives, and where young people face challenges, where you can step in and help them and give them support for a positive path forward. I think it's something we should all take as a personal responsibility. And I'm looking forward to getting involved in the DIVA program. The program starts after the end of the school year, And it's a 6-week program for young women. And I can't wait to be at some of their meetings.
And I'm thinking of programs also, a local one you may be aware of, Girls on the Run, and some of these others that do that also.
Right.
Okay. Dan calling here on line four. Speaking of the Apalachicola, I think that's what Dan wants to yak about. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to thank Representative Graham for her legislation, the Restore the Apalachicola Bay Act. The uniqueness of the act will have far-reaching effects on the whole discussion, I believe. There are scientists that understand that freshwater flow has an impact on the salinity of the bay. Dr. Skip Livingston is one, and he actually predicted what was going to happen with the loss of freshwater flow. So we don't have to be surprised by things that occurred, like this collapse of the bay that we experienced in 2012. It's also possible to model those impacts. So there can be a clear discussion about what the cause and results are of particular management in the basin. It's unfortunate we had to go through the 25 years of litigation to get to where we are blaming each other, but I think the legislation is actually going to open up that discussion in Congress and with the Corps of Engineers and maybe lead us back to more of a collaborative resolution so we can get on with meeting the needs of all the users in the basin and restore an Apalachicola River in the floodplain and the bay. So I just can't thank you enough for taking that leadership and helping move that whole discussion forward. And just as a last note, the ACF stakeholders did actually reach consensus on a sustainable water management plan for the whole ACF basin. It actually occurred the same week that you filed the legislation. So I think there's an expression called que suerte in Spanish that means good fortune and destiny. So mm-hmm. Hopefully those things can work together and we can really do what needs to be done in order to get the bay back.
Well, I appreciate that, Dan, and there certainly is a synergy there. And I've also taken the opportunity to meet with the Corps, and it was a wonderful meeting. We talked for quite a while, and they said, Congresswoman, we're just so glad to be in a meeting where we're not being yelled at. And I said, well, I want to develop a positive relationship so we can work together and start being able to resolve some of these tough issues.
Gwen, with all the years you've lived here.
And by the way, I told them to call me Gwen too, but
I lost that fight. You know how that goes. But have you taken the obligatory kayak trek down the Apalachicola yet?
I have spent so much time on the Apalachicola River. This has been passion and personal for me for as long as I can remember. So yes, I have had that opportunity, and it's just spectacular. And one of the things I want to do is to have as many people as I can get come down and see the Apalachicola Bay and see the river and see that this is a unique and special and beautiful place on our planet, and to become invested in protecting it, such as we have with the Everglades. That this is a treasure, and it's a treasure not only for North Florida and for Florida, but for our country.
Let's go to line three, if we could. A gentleman by the name of Bob is checking in with us here on Perspectives. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Tom, Gwen, I'm very impressed with how many congresspersons from across Florida, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, have signed on to the Apalachicola bill. At a time when Congress is having a hard time working across the aisle, how did you go about getting that kind of broad support for this important legislation?
Well, first, this voice sounds mighty familiar to me, Tom.
I was thinking, yeah, I think I interviewed this guy back during his gubernatorial days. And then what? Yeah. He went on to become a U.S. senator or something, right?
Yeah, and as known most especially by our family as Doodle. hey, y'all, this is my dad calling in. And hi, Dad. I love you.
I love you. So very, very proud of you.
Well, thank you. From the very beginning, from the very first day when I was sworn in, January 6th, I started reaching out to members of the Florida delegation. I started discussing the need to get back to working together on issues that, as the third largest in terms of population state in the country, we were missing out on many opportunities to really make a difference for our districts by not working together. As you may know, Tom and Dad, this may be a shock for you as well, things have become somewhat partisan. And that partisanship is a disservice to those that elect us because we should be putting political and partisanship aside to do what's right and best for our district and for our state. And so when we started discussing the Apalachicola Bay Restoration Act, I said, I'm going to start talking to my Florida colleagues about this and get as many members of the Florida delegation to become a part of it as we can. And I do believe that this is unprecedented, that we looked back historically, because I don't want to say anything that's not true, obviously, but we could not find another piece of legislation that had as many Florida colleagues coming together as this one. And it's a process of putting aside the politics to do what's right.
Gwen Graham, the congressperson from Florida's 2nd Congressional District, is with us here on Perspectives. And Senator Graham, if you can hang on the line for just a moment, I've got a question for you when we come back right here on Perspectives. Back with Gwen Graham and Senator Bob Graham. Senator, I had a question here for you. At what point did you realize that your daughter was going to dive headlong into the boiling political waters? Was this something you kind of encouraged from the get-go, or she just sort of got into it on her own? What happened there?
Well, from the time she was a young child, she had some of the traits that you associate with a person who is going to be in public life. She was open, friendly, smart. She liked to ask questions, lots of questions. She went through a process of preparing herself, although that wasn't necessarily the objective, but she got a good education. She worked in a variety of areas. I think the experience working with the school board, particularly on their negotiations, gave her some of the qualities of understanding what other people's positions were, trying to find that reasonable center point that she has shown so vividly now in the Apalachicola legislation. So it wasn't a surprise to me that she decided that she was going to run for Congress. I will say, and frankly, Gwen, I'm a little disappointed that she didn't seek my permission or even advice about doing it. But I was extremely happy and proud, and it's been a great family experience. I think one of the things that my parents emphasized to me, and I tried to carry it forward, was the importance of family relations. And during the campaign, Gwen had all of her sisters and lots of her nieces and nephews and cousins all involved in the campaign, and I hope that collectively we contributed to her victory.
Well, does she still every now and then give you a little call and say, Dad, John Boehner is driving me out of my mind. What do I do?
She hasn't made that call. I've told Gwen that my position was going to be that I wasn't going to try to interfere with the good work that she was doing. I had a lot of respect in her judgment and work ethic and ability to get along with people. But if she ever wanted any advice, she knew my telephone number. I'll have to say a few times I have violated that rule and without request have made some suggestions. But, Gwen, I don't think you think it's been too overboard with that. And whenever she wants to talk to her father is very, very happy.
No, as a matter of fact, Dad, he's been very cute in always prefacing any advice by, now, Gwen, I hope you don't mind my saying this. And I finally had to say to him, Dad, you don't need to say that because I made a commitment to the people of North Florida that I would represent them to the best of my ability. And if I wasn't welcoming my dad's advice, who I'm extremely biased, Tom, on this, but I do believe, and I know I've said this a couple times during the interview, but I have the best role model as a public servant, someone that was always informed, someone that was thoughtful in their decision-making process. That's the role model I have in my father, and that's the role model that I will work hard every day to emulate.
Well, and a role model that sometimes drew the ire of his own party. I remember there was a number of and you recall this back when you were governor, sir, when it came to the Equal Rights Amendment ratification in 1982, there were a number of Democrats who were really leaning on you to get thoroughly behind it. And as we know, it went down to defeat in the state Senate after passing the House earlier on that day. And you took some flack on that when you did environmental pieces of legislation that you were advocating there for protection of the Everglades and all of that. You got some pushback on that as well. So the family tradition carries on. We do have an email in from Cindy here before we go back to the phones, though, along that line. And she wanted to ask to explain your approval of Keystone XL Pipeline, not understanding, she says, why you would be in favor of using eminent domain of U.S. land for a foreign country, namely Canada. So,
sure. I anticipated this question would come up. First, I want to say that I am a native-born Floridian. There is nothing more important to Florida than our beautiful natural resources, and very proud of the legislation that I've been behind, such as Everglades restoration, such as preventing any oil drilling off of our beaches, this Apalachicola Bay Restoration Act that I just brought forward. And there are issues before Congress that have become very partisan, very political, and Keystone happens to be one of those. And I understand the concerns about the tar sands. I understand people's feelings about this, and I respect them. I've told some of my friends who feel very strongly that my vote was the wrong one that even though we disagree on this, you're still my friend, and I still love you. But back to your question, I went through a very thorough process of being informed on all aspects of this issue of Keystone and evaluating them with an eye towards the facts. Recognize that Canada is our closest neighbor and friend. They are going to extract the tar sands, whether we like it or not. So then the question became, what's the safest way to transport them? As a Canadian neighbor, I understand the concerns about transporting across our country, but it would be something that would very much damage that relationship if we denied them that right. I don't see that is a possibility. So how do we transport the tar sands most safely, most environmentally? And that is through much evaluation, much research. The pipeline that's been proposed is by far the more environmentally secure process than train transport. And that's how I reached my decision.
And one of the advocates in this, which I think many people didn't realize, was that the American Association of Railroads has been lobbying very, very heavily on this, again, against the Keystone XL pipeline. It hasn't just been the environmental community.
Right, because they want to continue to have the business of transporting the tar sands. And also, I want to say this. There has been a lot of discussion about the jobs that are associated with Keystone. there are a lot of industries in our country that are, by their very nature, temporary jobs. Construction is temporary. Once the project is finished, construction workers move on to the next job. So this is Keystone. The opportunity for jobs in building the pipeline is one for many workers that depend on temporary construction jobs to put food on their table.
Because of the vast breadth and width of the 2nd Congressional District, this edition of Perspectives being broadcast on WFSW in Panama City. Let's see if Joe's still on the line out there wanting to talk about Bay County stuff. Hey, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, real fine. Thanks for calling in, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the call. Congresswoman Graham, a big fan, big supporter of my wife and I of you.
Thank you.
Several months ago, there was an article in the Panama City News Herald concerning the school police force that Bay County created, and it's SROs for elementary schools, whereas middle schools and high schools are watched over by the sheriff's department, sheriff's deputies. It's a great program. A man named Mike Jones heads it. He was, I don't know if you recall, a few years ago, there was a school board shooting in Panama City, and he was the one who came to action and was able to end that successfully. It was a national story. And it's a fantastic program. I've gotten to know some of the officers, as both my children are in elementary schools here in Bay County. In Bay County, there are several schools in Panama City Beach and several in Panama City, and just a handful of officers to patrol them. And it's just great when you have them there. The administration and the front offices really appreciates having them there. However, it's a voluntary program. And I've spoken with some of them, like I said, and it's tough for them to commit to it full-time or be there all the time because they don't get paid. Mm-hmm. They are armed. They have jurisdiction on the school campus. But it comes down to an issue between the state, who allocates money to the sheriff's department, which obviously goes for deputies at the middle and high schools, and the local school board, who can decide how to allocate their money. I sent some emails out to Senator Guest's office, and they said there would have to be an appropriation from the state legislature, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to earmark money specifically to pay these officers? And, you know, I'm not saying a full-time salary, perhaps, just, you know, a small stipend, an hourly wage, you know, a 20-hour week, something to that effect. I'll take your answer off there. Thank you.
Well, first, thank you for recognizing Deputy Jones, I believe. I think he works with the Sheriff Department. He is a true hero. I've had an opportunity to meet him. And thank goodness that he was where he was when that tragedy occurred. I do understand this issue. It is a state issue for funding of the SROs in our schools. I'm happy to reach out to Senator Gates and talk to him about it as well. And I thank all of the officers that are in our schools because it's so important for young people to have the opportunity to build those relationships with law enforcement and have a foundation of trust as they move from elementary school into middle school and high school and graduate. The services that those officers provide in our schools are far greater than just a security presence. So thank you for your question, and I'll follow up with Senator Gates.
Yeah, Senator Gates is a nice guy. He certainly knows education with the background that he had over there in Okaloosa County, and often he seems to have been one of the more moderating factors in the Florida legislature.
And I don't know. My husband actually was worked as in the sheriff's department in Okaloosa County, so I've had the opportunity of knowing many folks over there in law enforcement.
Back to the phones we go. Our old friend Reed is online too. Hi, Reed. Thanks for your patience. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thanks. Representative, I've got a companion to your congressional travel resolution.
Okay.
Excuse me. This is a three-parter relating to taxes. Number one, 2015, those who sign on agree to do their own taxes. That is to say, no CPA, no friends, no relatives, nobody else. They just sit down with the forms and the publications, and they do it themselves. Then in 2016, work toward reform of the individual portion of the IRS code, and in 2017, work on the corporate side.
Oh, it sounds like a good time frame there, Reed, all mapped out. Good strategy, yeah.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing up my anti-travel perks bill. I know this is your suggestion for a companion component. The bill that I proposed with Representative Blum of Iowa is such a common sense no-brainer that members of Congress should not be flying on first class being financed by the taxpayer dollar. Every single dollar and dime that is spent should be spent effectively and efficiently. And I've been real surprised that there's been any pushback against this piece of legislation. I thought we would get unanimous support from all members of Congress, but such has not been the case. But Representative Blum and I will not be deterred. And we are continuing to advocate for what is an obvious common sense prohibition that should be put in place.
As far as following up on Reed's thing about the reformation of the income tax, and we've seen everything. We put it on a postcard and the flat tax and all these kinds of proposals. Is there a middle ground? Is there a way to simplify while still providing the equanimity that part of the tax code is still, you know, attempting to, right, to pull off?
Well, the tax code is so extremely complicated, and I would certainly be for finding a way to reform our tax code and simplify it so that it is easily understood by those that are expected to meet its requirements. So look forward if there's an opportunity to work on that. It's talked about regularly, the need to have tax reform. I mean, this is something that is discussed, but it has yet to be brought forward.
But is that what you strategically are looking for in Congress? All right, we know where the points of conflict are, and we can go into these partisan shells from now until eternity. But what issues can you get everyone to at least, like the Apalachicola, agree on?
What I have found, and from the moment that I was honored, and as again, this is an honor of a lifetime for me, to be able to represent the people of North Florida, is there are so many good people, regardless of party. I don't care whether someone has an R or a D behind their name. I'm looking for people that are willing to sit down and have a positive, rational discussion. We're not always going to agree, but in disagreement, you find compromise. It is possible to do on a host of issues. I think, unfortunately, you're absolutely right. At times, the partisanship gets in the way. And I'm just going to continue to be a voice of common sense and reason and work together with those who are willing to work together to find good solutions to the challenges we face.
Well, as long as we're talking about partisanship, let's see if David's still there. He wants to talk about immigration. What a gentle topic that is. Hi, David.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for allowing this great forum on public radio. I really enjoy it. And along the lines of common sense, Congresswoman, do you feel through various executive actions like the Dreamers and deferred action that we are incentivizing more people to come here illegally?
I think we need to have comprehensive immigration reform. It's a failure of Congress that we have not taken this issue on. This is an issue that is recognized by many different groups and across party lines is something that we need to have. I think that we should have a process in place where we first secure our borders and then have a process in place where those that are here legally are given priority. And those that have been here, we need to have very strict rules and restrictions in place and put them at the back of the line and allow our country to have an immigration policy that does not benefit those that have broken the law in being here, but that allows us to move forward.
You, gosh, we could talk for the entire rest of the day. My gosh. We?
I wish we could.
I know.
I'll stay here as long as you want, Tom. You're not going to kick me off, are you?
Oh, okay. Well, Taylor, let's see. Can we roll into the next second, possibly third hour here? We could go on all day. It has been just an absolute delight, and I have certainly learned a lot. And my special thanks to your dad, a former Florida governor and U.S. senator and all-around great guy, Bob Graham, for checking in today, too, and providing us with a representative in Congress.
Well, thank you. Is this the end?
Yeah, we
I
are
am sad.
Winding down.
I'm not ready for this to end. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I would welcome coming back whenever you would like to have me back on. And if I could end with this, to those that are listening, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be your representative in Congress. Even if you have not agreed with me on all of my decisions, I consider y'all to be friends, and will always be open to listening and having a dialogue of communication, and am bringing the North Florida way to Washington, D.C., which is being well received and is a positive for this district.
And should you meet her in person, expect a hug. Gwen Graham, thanks for being on with us today on Perspectives, which is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Lydell Rawls and Taylor Cox doing the deed today. Next Thursday, we'll talk about the Blue Ribbon Symposium over at FAMU. Have a good day.
8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.